Okay, we have an intimate group today. My name is Jim Sano, and I'm with the World Wildlife Fund. And welcome to this session on global sustainable travel. And we are taping this, so if you're asking questions or speaking, make sure that you speak into the microphone. My job at the World Wildlife Fund is I'm the Vice President for Tourism, Travel, and Conservation, which is really a catch-all title for a variety of different things, not only the member and donor travel programs, but also working with the teams out in the field to look at how the right forms of travel and tourism can be an incentive for local communities and governments to value their resources more intact than not. With me, I have Kathleen Pesolano, who is the Director of Destinations for the Global Sustainable Tourism Council. We're working very closely together on this project with the Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines in improving or upping their game in terms of their sustainability practices. She was also an attorney for the Federal Trade Commission, and particularly in the area of truth in advertising and holding people's feet to the fire that what they're saying is actually really true. Also, we have Yolanda Brown, who is the senior director at UnCruise, which is sort of the opposite end of the spectrum from Royal Caribbean. So she's here as a respondent to contribute to our discussion. Since we're such a small group, we'll make this very, very informal. If you have questions along the way, feel free to raise your hand, and the idea is really not only for this session, but also for the benefit who will be viewing the session later on off the website, is to make this as interactive and useful to you as much as possible. We are going to start out by, how many of you have ever heard of the Global Sustainable Tourism Council? You have? Wow, that is great. Kathleen will give you a background in terms of GSTC, its origins, and where it is right now in terms of advancing the sustainability bar for tour operators and hotels. And so I'll turn it over to you, Kathleen.
Thank you, Jim. And WWF has been a supporter of GSTC from the beginning, essentially, and we're very grateful for WWF's support. They have also helped other standard-setting bodies like a Marine Stewardship Council and Forest Stewardship Council to really take their business model to scale, to really impact globally and become known to consumers. And so we're really grateful for WWF's support on the GSTC side in tourism. So I'm very pleased to hear that many of you have heard of GSTC, and we're hoping to really spread the word. So please do share, the mission of GSTC and what we are all about. As you know, tourism sustainability is in the spotlight now. You know, you hear a lot about sustainable travel, about ecotourism, green travel. And that's why many of you are here. But again, it's been called a lot of different things, and there are a lot of different terms flying about in the marketplace. And some of these include geotourism, green tourism, ecotourism, heritage tourism, adventure tourism, community tourism, responsible tourism, sustainable tourism, and on and on and on. There is a lot of confusion about what these terms mean, understandably. And similarly, there are hundreds and hundreds of eco labels or sustainability labels out there in the marketplace, organizations that are certifying different organizations as sustainable or green. And so this is a space that's very difficult for consumers to make sense of, consumers of all different types, companies that want to source responsibly, travelers individually that are looking to make decisions when they're purchasing travel products. And coming from the truth in advertising space, this this space was especially attractive to me because there is a lot of confusion in the marketplace. And so the GSTC really was founded on this premise to try to bring some common understanding, develop a common language for what does sustainability mean in the travel context. And it was a partnership developed initially with sponsorship from the UN, specifically incubated within the United Nations Foundation for its first 2 years, and now is supported by the United Nations World Tourism Organization, and is also supported by, these are the other sort of key founding members at its outset, and now is sponsored principally by UNWTO. It is the global standard-setting body for sustainability in travel. And it is a membership organization and has wide global membership, you know, industry-wide. There was a lot of support for this idea of giving some meaning to sustainability, and so it really has support from, you know, thousands at this point of partners in various different capacities worldwide. And these are just some examples, some logos. You can see many others on the website. But, you know, from hotels, tour operators, governments, NGOs of all different sizes and scopes, so it is a very diverse membership body that we have, and you'll hopefully see why, many of you already understand why, having heard of GSTC's mission. But as the standard-setting body, that's what GSTC does. It sets standards that define what does sustainability look like, both for businesses and for destinations. And so sustainability is not a word that I actually like. I was just mentioning it doesn't really mean anything unless you give it a definition. That's the difficulty of it. But it's very important that in the context when we talk about sustainability in travel, we're looking not just at environmental practices and protection of natural resources, but also looking at how can tourism best benefit the economy of the places where tourism is taking place, and the culture and heritage, social environment, and as well as the natural resource environment of the place. So it's basically harnessing the policies and practices of those involved in tourism to maximize the benefits and minimize the negative impacts on destinations. And so to date, so far, there are two standards. One's for the tourism industry, and one is for tourism destinations. And so on the industry side, the goal is to develop specific sub-industry standards for different activities or sectors within travel. So right now, there is a hotel set of indicators and a tour operator set of indicators. So if hotels and tour operators are interested in guiding their practices or in becoming certified, they can look to the industry standards and the specific indicators that pertain to hotels and tour operators. And on the destination side, we right now have a general set of destination criteria, which are the minimum practices and policies recommended for governing and managing tourism at the destination level. And these are some example focus areas that the criteria cover. They're generally looking, and they're applicable, of course, in the different contexts that the standards are built for, but these are just some general themes that the standards cover. I won't read through all of them, but they're essentially the governance, the management, the policies and systems that touch all different sorts of aspects of tourism, all the way from strategic planning at the very top to engaging the communities where tourism is taking place, and then looking at creating economic opportunities for the people who live in those places, right down to specific policies to protect the natural environment, and really everything in between. You can take a look on the website, www.gstcouncil.org, for the full standards, but these are just some general themes. And these are standards that have been set based on science and based on consultation with various stakeholders, you know, cross-sector that touch travel and tourism. So like many ICEAL members, GSTC is an ICEAL member, and we set standards based on, you know, rigorous processes, including public consultation, and we update them, you know, periodically, just as other ICEAL members do. So we encourage you, we will be updating the destination standard in the coming year, and so it would be wonderful if you subscribe to GSTC's newsletter and look out for the public consultation that will happen on the destination standard, because we would love to hear your feedback on the criteria when that comes about. I know it's fascinating and very exciting to get into commenting on the standards, but it's really, really important that, you know, we get your views from your experience in the field and in your areas of experience in travel and tourism. So the way GSTC works is GSTC has a certification framework based on our standards, but GSTC doesn't actually, our staff does not actually go out and do audits to certify organizations. We work with certification programs that we have vetted, we've essentially accredited them to go out and do these audits. So if you see the GSTC's logo is right up here on the screen, and I hope you'll see it throughout the marketplace in the upcoming period, because we're really working with partners to roll it out at this point. But if there's a certification program that both is applying a standard that meets our standards requirements and also has been vetted to have rigorous practices, you know, they're transparent, they're awarding certification in a way that meets international best practice, then they can become qualified by GSTC or GSTC certified to conduct audits, and the entities that meet their standards will be deemed GSTC certified. So this is the chain of sort of custody with respect to our programs. We accredit certification programs, and certification programs are out there conducting audits of hotels, tour operators, destinations that that are then in turn deemed GSTC certified. So we would love for your partnership to, you know, remember the GSTC's logo, and we're really just at this next phase of our organization where sort of I call it 2.0. We're really getting the logo out there in the marketplace in the coming period, and we'll talk about that. But once you see GSTC certified advertised, you can know that that organization has been either certified by a GSTC accredited organization, and you can trust that it meets the GSTC's standards for sustainability, or if it's a certification program, it's been accredited by us. So that logo is going to be hopefully exploding with your help in the coming period. Now, again, this is the general framework. The GSTC's standard is the policies and practices that certified entities will have been vetted to meet, and you can know that when you're looking in the marketplace for our logo, that that's the way of trusting that that certification actually does meet the world's leading standard for sustainability and tourism. And this helps you to be able to, hopefully, you've got this on your radar screen about sourcing travel options. You know, we've got many different types of organizations here at this conference, and we're hoping to spread the word that in your policies, you can you know, instill preferential purchasing for GSTC certified product. So just want to go over quickly, conscious of time, but some examples of implementation. How have we been trying to bring this to scale, and with WWF's help, we're doing this. So the real key is getting partners on board to, at scale, within their organization, set policies that prefer to adopt on a wider stage the GSTC's framework. So far, on the destination side, for example, several countries have already decided that they are going to adopt targets for their destinations within the country to meet the GSTC's standards and receive certification or their level of distinction to have met the GSTC criteria for destinations. So that, in that sense, that an entire country would have committed to having its destinations meet the GSTC criteria, and then you as travelers, as organizations traveling, can know that when you're visiting this country and you see which destinations have been certified to this standard, that they are running them, they're governing tourism in a way that benefits the community to meet the GSTC's standard. So examples of this, Chile, actually has set their targets based on their businesses. So for hotels and now tour operators, they have set incentives for hotels and tour operators that are certified by the GSTC. So this picture shows Chile's website. The destination marketing arm of Chile has put on its website the hotels. They have this Sello S program, and S is for, of course, sustentabilidad, sustainability in Spanish. So the hotels or the lodgings that they have featured on their website have been distinguished using this standard, which meets the GSTC's criteria for hotels. And similarly, they're working on doing that for tour operators as well. So when you look out for the Sello S, you can know, because they're recognized by GSTC, that those hotels have been certified to a standard that meets the GSTC's standard for hotels. Same in Indonesia's done this at the destination level. Indonesia's made a commitment. They're actually requiring and incentivizing their destinations. They've set out for 20-plus destinations within Indonesia to be certified to the GSTC's criteria. And they've just begun on that path, but that is in the works, and they've committed to that nationwide. Same thing with Korea. The Republic of Korea has set a standard for urban destinations, knowing that, especially in their cities, there's a special need for sustainable management of those places. And so they've set a standard and had it recognized by GSTC. So once they implement this program, you know, you'll know, seeing that seal, that those destinations within the Republic of Korea have paid attention and have implemented the GSTC standard. And similarly, on the corporate side and other organizational side, we're beginning to partner with companies and organizations that are committed to sustainable procurement and sustainable sourcing. And so an example of this, you know, a very big example, is WWF's partnership with Royal Caribbean Cruises, which Jim will talk a lot more about next. But essentially, Royal Caribbean has set sustainability targets for its operations on many fronts. But one is with their shore excursions that they're offering to guests on their ships. So when they're working with shore excursions and looking at which ones to source, they've set a target that Jim will mention that prefers their own purchasing of tour operators that have become certified to the GSTC's certification program, to one of our certifiers. So that's the way that we're really beginning to see the needle moving as far as impact in the marketplace, and hopefully consumer awareness as well, once this begins being implemented and people see the logo. But we're also trying to get out there and speak about it as much as possible. But you know, if you have the opportunity within your organizations to, you know, it's a great marketing opportunity to partner with GSTC in this fashion and to really make a difference in your operations. Setting procurement targets along these lines is really a way that you can both, you know, be seen in the market and recognized for committing to procuring sustainable product, but then also, you know, being able to track it and know which ones of your suppliers are operating along these lines. So in addition to the certification framework, GSTC, I just want to mention, has a destinations program as well. And using the destinations standard, we do sustainability assessments of destinations, looking at the policies and practices of places that are depending on tourism for their economy. That's a lot of the destinations that are interested in this. You know, they're very driven, their economy is very driven by tourism. We do assessments of destinations and identify areas for improvement where policies and practices could come to the level of international best practice to our standard, and make recommendations along those lines for destinations to implement over time. And we also offer training for destination stakeholders, really any stakeholders on the corporate side as well. But in the destinations program, we find a lot of destinations are in need of guidance for how to manage tourism in a way that's going to benefit the local population to the maximum extent. And so that's part of our destinations program. These are, we've so far conducted destination assessments in 22 places, and we have others in the works. But these are examples of destinations that have made some sort of commitment to sustainability. These are not all certified sustainable. Some of them are. Some of them have gone on to the step of actually undergoing a certification audit by one of the GSTC recommended programs. So some of them are certified, but many of them have just begun their path because, of course, you know, one of the problems with the word sustainability, especially in the destination context, it's not something that you reach and then you wash your hands of and you're done. It's really about putting in place the systems and the policies and programs to keep going and keep improving and keep working on a continual basis and monitoring that progress. But GSTC's standard is about putting into place those systems and then continuing to work. So these are places that if you're looking for, you know, travel, these may be destinations you'd be interested in considering. You can see they're very diverse, all the way from, you know, Machu Picchu and the Sacred Valley in Peru, one of the most traveled places in the world, to Samoa in the South Pacific. You know, very diverse. There's also a UNESCO World Heritage site on here, so they're not all destinations that are marked by a political, you know, or geographic boundary that is government run, but they're very diverse and all over the world. So I will be glad to answer questions later, but really appreciate your time, and thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay, I thought we spent a few minutes talking about WWF's partnership with Royal Caribbean, and you might wonder what in the heck is a conservation organization doing partnering with seemingly on the outside a real bad actor in the tourism industry. And WWF actually welcomes the opportunity to really transform businesses at scale, as Kathleen was mentioning, and really looking at that opportunity to see how that can extend to the rest of the travel industry. Because as we all know, any of our tourism and the travel industry can either be an opportunity or a threat to a place. And we've all been around the world enough times to see many, many examples of this playing out. And so, while we'd like to think that governments can solve these solutions, really one of the biggest driving forces is the private sector and how they influence policies and their behavior in these destinations. Because as we all know, you know, one of the things in terms of where we are all operating is that due to a whole variety of factors, the quality and there's a lot of degradation of the resource, and that ultimately translates into a deterioration of the traveler's experience. You've probably been enough snorkeling to see on one end of the scale there's something like this, and then the other end of the scale there are places where there's a lot of coral bleaching and there's hardly any fish at all. So this is basically WWF's mission and its core purpose these days. It has offices in 100 different countries and has roughly 6,000 employees working on really these major areas of climate, food, forests, oceans, and wildlife. And there are a number of cross-cutting initiatives. Tourism is one of these initiatives. But it has a lot of reach out there in the world. As I said, 100 different countries, 18 million social media followers, and really it's the number one conservation brand in terms of recognition globally. So WWF partners with a whole variety of different corporations, again, seemingly some that you might otherwise not think of, to really try to move the dial in a variety of ways in terms of improving the corporation's sustainability practice and also their influence with all of their customers. And so with Royal Caribbean, Royal Caribbean takes roughly 5 million guests a year. They have six different brands, ranging from the mothership brand to others like Celebrity and Azumara, 43 ships, 500 ports of call, 5,500 shore excursions, and roughly 65,000 employees. So our charge in developing this partnership is to work with this entire organization to look at a whole variety of different sustainability practices. WWF was at the ground floor of starting the Marine Stewardship Council and the Forest Stewardship Council, MSC and FSC. And so we had some experience with the certification programs in the past, and in really looking at how this could be applied to shore excursions and some of the other areas of technical assistance. We also recently developed a global marine and coastal tourism strategy that looked at, okay, we're 60%, this is an interesting fact, 60% of all tourism occurs within 100 miles of the coastline globally. So it's huge. And so when you look at conserving oceans and where the intersection of tourism is right along the coast. We also are very much engaged in community-based conservation and specifically how communities can benefit. If those of you who attended earlier in the day, that's this concept of creating incentives for local communities. And have had a lot of experience in marine protected areas. WWF was the first conservation organization to get its foot in terms of helping to create organizations like the Charles Darwin Research Station in the Galapagos. So the technical assistance goals that we've embarked upon with Royal Caribbean, they fall into these three major areas. One is greenhouse gas emissions. As you can imagine, these big ships, 6,000 passenger ships, they emit a lot of greenhouse gases. And so Royal Caribbean has made a target by 2020 to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions across their fleet by 35%. It's huge. And that's through a variety of replacing ships, putting newer technology, scrubbers, and so forth on board. Ultimately, this is in their best financial interest, too, because if they burn less fuel, then it goes right to their bottom line. Seafood sourcing is another big initiative. They've made a commitment to source 90% of their wild-caught seafood from MSC sources, and 70% of their farm-raised fish through ASC, Aquaculture Sustainable Council, sources. Another big, huge commitment when you think about the costs associated with buying from these sustainable sources, but they're buying in so much volume. Like one of the large ships with 6,000 passengers has 21 restaurants on board. So you start multiplying that out with 5 million passengers, and they're purchasing a lot of seafood. Commodity sourcing strategies like where they're getting their beef, their flour products, and so forth. A destination stewardship project that's directly related to GSTC in terms of really working with these destinations to come up with management plans that really conserve resources and yet provide a high-quality experience. You may have heard about this whole concept of over-tourism that's been in the news of late, where the city of Barcelona, the residents have voted recently to cap the number of lodges that are permits for lodges in hotels because they've had enough. They've reached their self-determined carrying capacity. And then also passenger education in terms of conservation issues. And so Royal Caribbean has now in every one of the cabins throughout the Royal Caribbean fleet, there's a special edition of the WWF Oceans Conservation Magazine. For those ships that have a dedicated TV channels, there's a whole TV channel devoted to conservation programming. And then they've also committed to combat wildlife trafficking. And so in every one of the cabins and in various strategic places on the ship, there are know before you go ways that if you're going ashore and buying souvenirs, what not to buy. So again, this partnership with the Global Sustainable Tourism Council, it is something that when we looked around at all the eco labels and what are all the certification brands, and there's everything from TripAdvisor's Green Leaders program to some of these other programs that you see associated, like with Costa Rica, the CSP program, and so forth. Amongst these 390 or so eco labels, it was very hard to try to pin down what is the one that's going to be applicable at this scale of 500 ports of call and 5,500 shore excursions. And so, working with Royal Caribbean, one of the really industry leading steps that they made was to endorse GSTC and its certification program. Never been done before at this scale. And then underneath that really is endorsing the GSTC Tour Operator Certification Program and the Destination Assessment/Certification Program. And so the goals really that are laid out underneath the tour operator and the destinations piece of this technical assistance program, they're staged because it's, as you might imagine, you know, a 6,000 passenger cruise ship, it's hard to turn on a dime. It takes quite a number of miles to actually make that turn. And so really to kind of implement this at scale, we developed these series of targets. And one is really to look at their operations in line with WWF's existing marine and global and coastal tourism strategy. Again, to endorse the GSTC certification program and the criteria. And really to recognize those shore excursion tour operators that have already been vetted to a level against the GSTC criteria. This has been going on for a while already. Much to the credit of Royal Caribbean, they have been thinking about this since about 2008 in terms of improving the practices of their tours while they go on shore. And so one of the important things is to recognize those tour operators that are trying to do the right thing right now. And then really beginning to train and update the operations manual for the Royal Caribbean staff who are actually managing and sourcing these excursions. And then starting actually last year, they began to support specific WWF marine conservation projects. One of the ones that was right out of the gate was to help fund a community-based conservation program to see whale sharks in Donsal in the Philippines. And then the other one was to fund a sharks and rays tourism guide, not only for Royal Caribbean's operators, but for any operator taking tours to view sharks and rays. In 2017, Kathleen will be leading the way to train the tour operators and also the key Royal Caribbean staff about the GSTC certification program. And at this time too, because their shore excursion, their contracts with the tour operators, they expire or they renew every 2 years. Kathleen and her group will be working with the Royal Caribbean staff to include in the request for proposals to source shore excursions from the tour operators language that will basically say we'll give preference to those who are GSTC certified. And by 2017, to conduct some additional destination assessments that Kathleen can talk about in terms of, you know, what's involved in these destination assessments and also support two additional projects. By 2018, which is just next year, is to start implementing this preferential sourcing policy. So Royal Caribbean has 150 tour operators that provide shore excursions, everything from little mom-and-pop operations to Abercrombie and Kent and TUI. So they are ultimately going to be put on notice that one of the factors on which you're going to be judged on whether or not to become a partner with a contractor for Royal Caribbean is to whether or not you have GSTC certification or not. It's complicated because, as you know, some of these big operators have quite a complicated supply chain, and they are in turn subcontracting and subcontracting. And so ultimately, the goal is to certify the actual tour operator that is operating that tour, not necessarily the DMC or the aggregator at the top, because in many cases that would be impossible. So like, for instance, one of the shore excursion providers, if you call it the master shore excursion providers, is TUI, the largest travel company in the world. It would be very difficult to certify all of TUI, but if you go down the supply chain to the tour operator that is actually providing the shore excursion for Royal Caribbean, it's a lot easier to certify that tour operator. So this is where it kind of gets interesting because, in effect, Royal Caribbean and others, the Venture Travel Trade Association, has also, we're embarking down this road with ATTA to really implement this certification program. But with Royal and potentially some of the other big players whose contractors are A&K and Acorn and TUI and Destination Asia, some of these big, large travel companies, they're in effect being put on notice that, okay, if you want to play ball with us, then you have to be certified. So this has the power to influence not only the Royal Shore Excursions, but much of the rest of the industry. And for example, if you're a tour operator and you're thinking about doing business with some of the same tour operators that are providing the Royal Shore Excursions, then you might want to pay attention to this. And so by 2019, they have made a commitment to, in their marketing of the shore excursions, to only market those shore excursions that have been, are provided, the only marketing shore excursions and giving them the label sustainable tours, only conferring that label to those tour operators, suppliers that have been GSTC certified. So when you go on the Royal Caribbean or if you go on one of these cruises, and you look at all the shore excursion possibilities that are available to you, then the only ones that will be marked are those that are operated by GSTC certified operators. And then by 2020, they have made a commitment to source 1,000 tours or label, mark, source 1,000 tours that are provided by GSTC certified operators. We think this is very doable given what is going on right now. But again, we think the potential going forward is much greater. The pond is much greater than Royal Caribbean, but it's every single one of these tour operators who didn't show up, who probably should have showed up, because this is how some of these larger companies are beginning to look at sourcing. They want an easy way, a shortcut way to determine whether a tour operator is, their practices and policies are sustainable, because otherwise they can say they're sustainable, but nobody has ever looked under the hood of these tour operators. So, and that goes, and it is manifested itself in the training of the guides. And ultimately, wildlife trafficking, which I mentioned earlier in the day, is one of these elements that is embedded within the GSTC standard. And so when travelers are going ashore and buying stuff again and going to places like Angkor Wat, then, you know, there's a tremendous opportunity. Many of the larger ships, the Royal Caribbean ships, are being positioned in China because that's where the last year they were estimating that there will be 125 million outbound international Chinese travelers. And they're very prolific in terms of buying stuff when they go abroad. And so we want them to buy the right stuff and not buy, I mean, this is the picture that I took last August in Vietnam, which is one of the ports of call. And you go into one of these high-end antique stores and you can buy this stuff. So our goal is to try to nip this in the bud, educate the travelers who are on board these ships, and also hopefully convert these travelers into ambassadors for wildlife versus consumers of wildlife. So this is, as I mentioned, this all got rolling with President Obama and his commitment and his direction to work with all the federal agencies to work with NGOs and also the private sector and getting some of the key big players to really make these commitments to not only address specific issues like wildlife trafficking, but also sustainability on a much larger scale. And so that's why we're really putting a lot of energy into this GSTC partnership and really to try to work the levers so that, again, if we can get some of the biggest players to endorse GSTC, and if they can begin to source, use one of their sourcing criteria is the GSTC standard, then that has potential to move the market. And also, it has potential for these tour operators to really differentiate themselves from the rest of the pack. So that's kind of in a nutshell is our presentation. And Yolanda, I'm going to call upon you first because, again, you're at the other end of the spectrum in terms of cruising, and you have ships as small as 22 passengers.
Right.
And so I might ask you, you know, what you're doing and across your fleet to improve the sustainability of your operations, not only on board the ship, but also when you go ashore.
It's a lot easier to do it with 22 to 88 passengers, you know, than the 6,500. But some of the practices that we have are twofold. On board, we have taken practices to reduce our waste, you know, on board with buying in bulk. One of the key things that we've done is started to purchase wine by the keg. And I had mentioned before, when we started doing this, it kind of wasn't the cool thing. It's kind of cool now, you know, to be able to do that. But if you think about our products as an all-inclusive product, and so you have a lot of wine that's being drank on an 8-day, 7-night trip. And to be able to reduce the number of bottles that are coming on board and the packaging for that as well. And then the winemakers have stepped up and they're producing some wonderful product that we purchase from the areas that we travel in Pacific Northwest mainly. So that's another way to be able to support the local area and to reduce the amount of waste that we have on board. Some of the other key areas that we do, which it sounds like Royal is looking to do as well, we don't necessarily have like offshore excursions as an inclusive product. Everything is included, and we love to be able to work with the local vendors in the area and to protect their culture and their way of life and the way that they do things. So our operators that become a part of our program are hired locally from the areas that we travel. So our guides in Costa Rica, Panama, are from local operators there, both in Hawaii, both in Baja as well. When we go to Toto Santos, or Aca Verde, excuse me, in Baja, we work with a local family that brings the burros that they own, and that's one of the excursions, but it's from a local operator that is there and knows the area very well. What else? Other areas we talked about?
Yeah. Since we have a small group, why don't we open it up to any questions or examples, case studies that you might know of, or
First, I want to apologize for being late. And so if you already addressed anything I ask, I will defer and talk later. But I'm curious, did you address how you chose GSTC certification versus other certifications? Did that come up already?
Yeah. What?
We don't have to cover it again. I can talk to you later.
I could just briefly answer that question. Again, there are roughly 390 eco labels, eco travel labels, and recognizing this, the UN back in 2007 or 8 in that ballpark, they tried to rationalize or harmonize all the certification standards that are out there. And so I think it was roughly 32 organizations, they developed a kind of a consensus standard and criteria, and that's how GSTC came into being, with funding for the United Nations Foundation and Rainforest Alliance, and WWF was there early on. And so that's how it came into being.
Okay, thank you. You're very kind to repeat what you undoubtedly said before. Carbon offsetting. I saw that Royal Caribbean is offering, looks like they'll be offering a carbon offset for their tours. Are they also doing it for their vessel itself when they sell you a cruise? Did I misunderstand?
They have made a commitment. They actually have not made a commitment to... The commitment thus far has been to really investigate options to offset all of their shore excursions and embed that into the cost of the excursion, which it turns out isn't all that much. We've also put in front of them the option to offset their entire cruise. But that would be on an opt-in basis, kind of like when you book a United Airlines ticket today and the travelers offer the option to offset their flight. So we are working with WWF's offset providers that we use for all employee travel. And some of the offset projects are WWF conservation programs. For example, a biogas program in Nepal. So that's a good way to really connect the dots in terms of our relationship with Royal Caribbean and WWF. The other thing is we're looking at incentives for travelers to make their offsets. And one of the incentives might be that we put in front of them is if you offset your cruise, which It's rather interesting because we already did the calculations in terms of if you take a 10-day cruise and you're in a standard cabin and there are two people in that cabin, take a guess at what it costs to offset that 10-day cruise, dollar-wise. Not too bad. It's $50. So and it actually is kind of counterintuitively, the carbon footprint per passenger on a 3,000 passenger vessel is actually half of that than a smaller vessel, because there's one propulsion system and all of that carbon is spread out over that many more passengers. So what we have put forth in front of them is that a program where when the guest is checking out and settling up their rather large bar bill, that they will have this opportunity to offset their cruise and potentially receive a voucher towards a future cruise. And we're actually taking a page in some respects from Lindblad Expeditions and their travel philanthropy program, where they offer a similar incentive that if you donate over $250 to their travel philanthropy program, let's say in the Galapagos, then you receive a $250 voucher towards a future cruise. They get 70% of their passengers who opt in for this. And it actually turns out to be a very brilliant marketing move, because the cost to acquire, these vouchers are transferable, by the way. So the cost to acquire a new traveler, marketing costs, can be $500, $600. The cost to get a repeat traveler is certainly more than, like in this case for Royal Caribbean, a lot more than $50. So it's a win. You try to find these win-win solutions.
What about food management? I heard something recently about the big cruise ships, that they're relooking at their big buffets and how they and the waste that comes from those. What are the ships doing in that regard?
Yeah, very good question. And that is also one of the things that WWF is working on. If you can imagine, on these big ships with 6,000 passengers, 2,500 crew, you go through a lot of food and beverages. And yes, cruise ships have this reputation of people just gorging to their heart's content. We had an option. I never thought in a million years that I'd ever set foot on a 6,000 passenger cruise vessel, but I did. And got a back-of-the-house tour, including a tour with the executive chef for one of these vessels, who was very passionate about food waste. Every bit of food they save goes right to their bottom line. So they have an incentive to really use their order efficiently and really reduce the waste that's on board. And they've employed a whole variety of strategies. One is they look at the demographics of the nationalities that come on board the ship, and that influences how they order. Americans, not surprisingly, eat twice as much food as other nationalities. But they've also gone down this path of getting rid of all these giant buffets and putting in more and more a la carte restaurants. Some of the a la carte restaurants are premium restaurants where you get premium wines, but you have to pay extra for those. And so they're actually making more money, but actually using less food too, because they can control the portions. And then they don't call them buffets anymore, they call them food courts, and so they have these little food stations. And then they hired a psychologist to look at, you know, how to influence people's behavior in these kinds of settings. And one of the things that I found totally fascinating is they took these formerly giant plates and they gradually began to shrink them smaller and smaller till they're the size of a big salad plate. And according to the psychologist, there's a bit of a stigma, especially if you're in a group setting, to go for seconds. So this also cut down dramatically in terms of the amount of food people will eat at the food court. Bar is a different story, but so.
So my question, we talked a little bit about this morning in the sustainability session this morning, and I'm interested in hearing a little more from you about the potential or the interest from the consumer when it comes to labels around sustainability. Of course, there's a reason why there's 390 labels when it comes to tourism sustainability, but really I think, you know, there's such a confusion in the consumer market around what exactly does that mean. So I'm sure you guys have some research on consumer interest and response. So could you maybe comment on that?
Sure. So there is a lot of research in this space, and there is research that shows that when all else is equal, people will want to prefer, you know, to purchase a sustainable product. But interestingly, there is a lot of market research out there as well that shows that people are loath to pay more. So it is a bit of a, you know, there's a lot of sustainability labels out there on the marketplace, but and a lot of confusion around that. But there is not strong research to show that people, you know, are demanding this to the point where they're willing to pay more. And so in light of that, there's some interesting research out of the University of Surrey. Xavier Font, I encourage you to look up his research. He's a professor at Surrey doing some really innovative work on sustainability marketing. And he has found that people want it, they just don't want to be hammered with information about sustainability. You know, they don't necessarily want to know how the company's doing it and all this, you know, but they want to know that the company, they want the results of the sustainability work. So they want the high quality experience, you know, they want to engage with local people, they want to eat local food, they want to know, and they want it to be easy to buy local product. But they don't necessarily want to hear marketing that hammers the point home about how the company is bringing those possibilities to the product. So it's a bit of a an interesting dichotomy for those of us that are in the space of, you know, operationalizing sustainable practices, because at this point it's really more of a implementation tool, in my view, than a marketing tool. Even though there still are companies and you know, destinations and organizations interested in marketing that they're doing sustainability work, it's really more effective as a tool for actually implementing the practices, if that makes any sense. So the GSTC has come up with this global standard, and it's not on the same level as a lot of the sustainability, the 390 sustainability marks out there. It's the accreditation body, the standard setting body that recognizes those that meet the GSTC's global standard. So that's why, you know, WWF has partnered, as they have with MSC and FSC. GSTC is sort of on that same plane. But it's really more a tool to help companies and organizations implement the practices and know which practices are recommended and be able to, you know, monitor progress along implementing those, because people want those practices to be implemented. They want the results, they want the kind of experience that those practices deliver, but in the marketing side, they're not necessarily looking for, you know, how can I find sustainability? That's all I want is sustainability, and I'm willing to pay for that. So it's a little bit of a challenge. We do have the label for people to be able to recognize, you know, what products are going to give me that experience. But sustainability research, marketing research is showing that the people want the experience. They want these practices to be in place, but they don't necessarily want to be bombarded with sustainability marketing messaging.
And I might add, in other consumer verticals, there's as you may know, more and more marketing is gravitating towards content and really storytelling around your products or your services. Probably the best example of that is Patagonia, where you pick up a Patagonia catalog these days, and there are a lot of stories in the actual print catalog, and that is their sustainability as their brand. And that's how they're distinguishing themselves. And when you want to buy a $200 jacket, you can go to their website. And so in a similar sort of way with Royal Caribbean on board these ships, again, part of the strategy is to try to influence their view or their perspective in their cabin with the storytelling, with the magazine, with the short films and whatever. And so when they're deciding on which shore excursion to tell, then again, this mark is a shortcut to say, okay, you know, I really want to have an experience that contributes to conservation.
Hello, I'm Frieda of About Argyle Walking Holidays in Scotland. We are a member of the Green Tourism Scheme there and have a gold certificate. We ask our customers in the customer survey whether that was important for their decision to walk with us. And 40% says that was one of the reasons why they decided for us. So what we have learned that people find it more and more important to, especially if you go out, we go hiking in Scotland, out hiking, that you do something back for the environment and local communities.
Yeah, I can see that, and certainly in different countries, the awareness is vastly different. Good case in point is the Netherlands is rather stunning that I just found out the other day that 1 in 6 residents and or households in the Netherlands is a WWF member. Stunning. So when they're going out and searching for trips and everything, and if there's a sustainability mark, then they're more likely to gravitate towards that than, you know, because they have this awareness already. So one more question, we're gonna wrap it up.
So if I understand it correctly, the operators who operate the shore excursions, they would be certified. So for example, the people who have the burros, what would their experience, personal experience be as they go through this process? As they go through this certification.
The operator?
The people who have the burros.
So that would be a little bit more in your vein because it's their organization that is dictating what that certification process is.
Sure. So basically, when a company is being certified, an assessor will review the policies that the company has in place and do an on-site audit to make sure that, you know, the policies are actually compliant with the standard. But as you're mentioning, of course, the experience of an extremely small operator would be different from a massive company. Right, so there is an initial assessment, and there's a process to work with the operator it's not a consulting process because it's important that the assessor be independent, but there are multiple stages to the process to shed light on what the operator would need to do in order to meet the standard. And aside from that, there are ways to conduct an audit where certain criteria may not be applicable in certain cases, depending on the local circumstance of the operator. So it is the standard is designed to be applied in a variety and of different settings, all the way from an individual operator to a company that has more wherewithal to monitor greenhouse gas emissions and the like. And so it looks different, but it's still sort of the same aspect of certification.
Okay. Oh. Okay. One more.
Let's use Costa Rica for an example. The certification that goes on there, and what GSTC is authorizing different programs or one program. How much does cost come into this for, like, hotels, right? Yeah. Is that part of the criteria, the approval that you're giving and making?
Yeah.
From one country to another? Are there big, huge disparities?
Yes. No, that's a really good question, because along the same line, you know, there may be smaller operators that are interested in certification where cost could be prohibitive. At the moment, the GSTC doesn't have affordability, a value on affordability as one of our criteria, but that's a suggestion that has come up. So in the case of Costa Rica, for example, I believe that is free of charge, that certification program, that it's subsidized for. It's a government-run CST. It's a government-run program. I'm not sure whether it's free, but at the very least, it's subsidized, I believe. So government programs like CST that are adopting and adding incentives on a national scale typically, you know, do make concessions for, you know, to try to incentivize their businesses and other stakeholders to participate. But it is a challenge. Private certification, you know, does cost money. And so in the case of a larger partner like a Royal Caribbean that is setting sustainability targets and looking at working with, you know, its contractors, or having its purchasing policy favor contractors that have worked with their supply chain in turn, there is the hope that, you know, the contractors that are sourcing smaller operator tours will see the value in working with their supply chain to help them to become certified and to meet that cost in order to, you know, be able to take advantage of the preferential purchasing from a larger procurer of the tours like a Royal Caribbean. But cost is a challenge in the marketplace, and you know, it's a really good question, because it does come into play.
And I just might add, there is the possibility, like for Stewardship Council and Marine Stewardship Council group certification. So if you have a group of smaller tour operators, then they can kind of go through the same process and get certified, and the costs would be spread out. So thank you. We got to wrap up, and thank you, Kathleen and Yolanda, for this session, and for you all for your excellent contributions. Please fill out your evaluations. The ETC Abby back there and her team love it to get feedback in terms of future programming. So thank you very much.